This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's Shake Them Ropes, Chris Novembrino, with power, with water, with internet. Jeff Hawkins didn't really have to worry about any of those things this week. Did you? You didn't get hit with snow, did you?
We got hit with wind. And Chris, wind. Let me remind you, with real power comes real responsibility.
Yeah, that's true. It's a powerful thing. Wind is one of the many powers that there are out here. But we have power again here in Texas. It's been quite a week, though, man.
Oh, yeah. Once-in-a-lifetime storm hits Texas, and everything goes to hell.
So I have obviously been following the news coverage of this. It's a little bit different when you're living the news. But I've noticed some people talking about the storm in 2011 that was somewhat similar to this. But I will explain to people a little bit of the contrast. In 2011, we had another deep freeze, and it got really cold. What ended up happening, though, was like an ice freeze. So it froze over I-35, and it was an absolutely frozen highway. It was a long time before they even got salt trucks on there. I remember people were trying to drive on it and trying to drive 60 miles an hour on a highway that had a sheet of ice that was several inches thick, and accidents, of course, ensued and everything. This is a little bit different. There was a lot of snow. When people are saying a centuries old storm or whatever, since I've lived in Texas and I've lived here 15 years, I've never seen this many inches of snow. You'll occasionally get a little dusting at some point in the winter, like one day, you know, it's like quirky and it's there for a day and it's gone. In this case, like, it came down, there were really big snowflakes, man. And the big problem out here in Texas is that people don't really know, as I sort of mentioned with the ice driving, people don't know how to drive in snow.
No.
People don't know how to prepare for snow. That's, I think, the part that really blindsided a lot of my friends and neighbors, is they just, you know, don't have thermal underwear, for example, which is a thing that I own. Like, you know, they don't have an extra space heater. They don't have blankets. They don't have things stocked up in terms of, like, canned goods, soups, and that sort of things. Things that you can just eat without having to necessarily cook it. Already prepared food, that sort of thing. And I think that made this particularly hard on people.
Yeah, now that I can relate to, because people in Los Angeles don't understand rain, even though we get it once a year. But, like, the cities are not built. Like, the sewage system out here cannot handle even a moderate amount of rain. Everything floods out here. But, yeah, snow's a dangerous thing, and it's... You tell the people who want to live in the cold that there's dangers to snow and ice, but they love the white, and it's so pretty, and all these other things. And you go, no, it's fun to visit, but you don't want to live there.
Well, I like Trisha. So I'm not going to be a co-signatory.
Oh, you really have to out me, you son of a...
On that, no, I think Trisha is wonderful. I think it's great that she listens to the show regularly. And as
not for long.
No, well, you know, I'm her favorite host on Shake Them Ropes, especially right now. I'm putting her over strong. No, so anyways, getting back to the snowstorm here, I had to go out. Well, I didn't have to, but after day one, I took a kind of quick stop. I was like, yeah, you know, a few more things. I don't know if they're... I hadn't lost power or water yet, but I had been reading reports, as everyone had, that power and water could go out. It's like, I'd feel a lot better if I went and grabbed some bottled water and just grabbed a few more goods here to make sure I can absolutely 100% make it through. So I went and did that. What I hadn't priced in, and I think has made the crisis out here a lot rougher for people, is that the power going out at grocery stores means that they have to give up all of their frozen stock. So, like, when I went to my local grocery store here, all of the doors on all of the frozen, like, pastas and the frozen Chinese food and the pizza, all that stuff, it's all taped off, and they don't want anyone buying it because it lost thaw. You know, and it actually all went, you know, not up to room temperature. Well, I guess maybe up to room temperature, depending on how cold the room got. But anyways, point being, it was no longer sellable food, which creates even more scarcity. And so people are trying to compensate for that. And like, the grocery store is packed. Oh, by the way, it's not as though the pandemic has stopped either. So really, really stressful time. And then I haven't even told you about this. You do know, Jeff, that I live at one of the great apartment complexes in Texas, but arguably the planet, and that we have a high quality maintenance team. Well, the maintenance team, those guys are nice, but the property management team, just top notch people.
I sense some sarcasm.
You have heard about this off air for years now, because we're friends. We talk off air sometimes. I let you text me multiple times a week. You have a limit that I've been increasing due to good behavior on a regular basis, and I applaud the good behavior. But this week, Jeff, guess how many messages I have gotten in terms of emails from this apartment complex?
Is it a high or a low number?
It is a high number.
I will go with 25.
You nailed it. It was
what?
25. Like, it might be 26 or 20. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's like probably 28 or 29 after today.
That's right. Kill my joy, Chris. But no, continue.
No. But no. So a very solid guess. We were just getting an endless sea of them. Yesterday, I got one at 9 a.m. that said FEMA assistance. I don't need FEMA assistance. I don't want anyone to freak out and worry about me. But it says this. We received this text. Siren emoji, siren emoji. FEMA is finally here, Texas. If you're still without power and need a place to warm up, clean up, and sleep until things restore, FEMA is paying for hotels. And then there's a phone number. If you know of anyone who needs it, press 1 for Texas disaster relief and follow prompts. You will need to know the following. Pen, paper, date of disaster, social security number, address, income, and home and apartment info. The process should take about 20 to 30 minutes to complete. Now, Jeff, what do you think that sounds like?
BS.
Yeah, that sounds like a scam that my apartment complex sent off to everyone. And they ended up sending an email about 30 minutes, or I'm sorry, not 30 minutes, 3 hours later. So plenty of time for people to go. It says, "Dear residents, unfortunately, the information that was given to us to share with the residents regarding FEMA is a scam. Please do not call this number and provide them with any personal information." To make matters worse here, today they actually sent off another email talking about loss and damages on property. They've been kind of wishy-washy when it came to, you know, frozen pipes. Here's another thing. I'm sure you're aware of frozen pipes and how pipes can freeze when it gets cold. A lot of people don't. Just talking about institutional knowledge, a lot of people don't know how to keep the doors open, how to keep pipes cool. A lot of these pipes are too old and not built for this sort of temperature regardless, even if you did all of that stuff because of how cold it got. And they sent off an email today saying that that you're responsible for all of that, and that if your pipes burst, that's on you. Call renter's insurance, but you're ultimately liable for this. Payway. To compare and contrast here, Jeff, Payway, the Chinese restaurant, they sent off an apology letter saying that they realized that when they sent off the buy one, get one this week in certain parts of the country that it was insensitive, so they're extending it into next week.
Oh, pipes are not your responsibility. You can't go into the walls and control them.
I mean, the audacity of talking about your responsibility after sending a FEMA scam to everyone the day prior.
Well, okay. I can't top that, so I'm just going to go into something else.
But people say they like the banter.
I appreciate that you're okay and that your apartment management team is scum.
Oh, we did. I forgot that I might have buried the lead here. I did lose water for like about a day and a half. Okay. But I didn't lose power. So I'm looking at all this rolling blackout stuff at the end of the day here. And like, obviously it happened. I know that. I think what's twisted to me is how, like, I didn't experience any of that, and there are some people who are out of power for days, and, like, I know that, like, some of the rich neighborhoods here in Dallas never experienced any blackout. I figured in my case it's because we got hit with that tornado about 8 months ago, so they just changed the transformer on my block because we had a big power outage when that happened. But, you know, it's messed up, man. It's just, it's tough. It's tough.
Well, glad you have all your utilities back. It's that my friend in Austin just got his power back today after 5 days out, I believe. So
yeah, they had it really bad in Austin. There's several power management companies in the state here, and some have performed, I don't know, I can say better or worse, because I don't actually really have a good qualitative analysis of this, but certainly differently.
Got an update on Peacock job. What are we going to call this? We're going to label this. Jeff tries to run the WWE Network. There's breaking news that broke tonight. I have two interesting avenues that have happened. One of which, a contact at NBC Peacock has agreed to at least put my resume and cover letter if I send my candidate number from the database, which was my fear, as you recall. I will get it in front of the right person. So I'm at least going to be heard. I don't know if that means they're going to like my resume and cover letter. They may just be looking for somebody from, like, the MLB Network to run this thing. But I'm at least going to be heard on it. And then, the more interesting thing, a known name in WWE is looking to see if they have any sway in the decision making, and might give me a little bit of a boost if it comes to that. And that was nice, because I don't think this person knows me from Adam, but on a recommendation, they said, "Hey, I'll look into what poll WWE has with this Peacock decision and let you know." So hey. You know, it never hurts to ask. And all I did was ask, and I received somewhat. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to get the job. Doesn't even mean they're going to interview me for the job. But progress has been made, Chris, and I will take that as a small little victory in the palm of my hand.
That's a wonderful thing. I think that's great. Would it help if I wrote a song that petitioned Peacock to hire you?
No. In fact, it would do the opposite, because you killed the XFL already with your songs.
No one thinks that. Absolutely no one thinks that. People think that the XFL would probably still be around if the teams had adopted my theme songs. You know that. I know that. You shouldn't say things like that. It betrays the audience. We have a trust rapport that we've built with them. Yeah, we do.
Oh, this whole show's been alive for 6 years, Chris. What are you talking about?
Maybe for you, but for me, it's been the most true thing I've ever done.
We had Rob McCarron here saying he was going to eat a hat. So
okay,
they
Rob, see, here's the thing. I like to think of what I did is redeem the show's trust fall that occurred when McCarron refused to eat the hat.
Okay.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, he said it very clearly, and then he weaseled, and he didn't even weasel in a really kind of satisfying sort of way, because, you know, he could have heel weaseled. He didn't even really do that. It took me coming in to cleanse the palate, cleanse the room, bring the mojo back. Peacock, you need to hire Jeff. I'm just gonna say it.
So you can do the theme song for WWE Network? Know,
in Texas, it is freezing cold, and I'm a broken man, and you can make me whole by hiring Jeff Hawkins. I wrote that for you.
You had a guitar at the ready.
I tape literally with six guitars behind me at all times.
Well, let's be slightly critical of the company then. interesting thing on our rundown sheet. Not a lot of news this week. We're going to have ice cold NXT takes from TakeOver and an Elimination Chamber preview to end the show. and then just random thoughts about this ridiculous SmackDown and other things in between. But an interesting piece of PR, I would say, cleanup this week, Chris. Earlier in the week, a tweet from the company: WWE offers our employees a special promotion at http://wweshop.com, including a 50% discount on merchandise and a 30% discount on championship title belts. Also, Tap Out Performance Apparel is available at a 40% discount for employees. They even receive free shipping. Now, this off the heels of the news that nobody was getting a bonus.
Can we do it? Wait, they're not getting it at cost. It's not even getting them old clearance material, like stuff that they're trying to clear out, old supplies from old gimmicks and that sort of thing. We're still trying to get a buck off of you.
Yes. Yes. That was brought the negativity on Twitter. And so it was sort of leaked, I think, personally. Our friend Brandon Thurston, who does WrestleNomics, reporting that employees, many of which were not receiving bonuses, did receive $3,000 in WWE stock. Now, you have more thoughts on WWE stock than I do. The voting, to understand WWE, this stock is not very volatile, so it's not easy to trade. It's not, doesn't have a lot of voting power because Vince McMahon's class of stock has like a 10-to-1 advantage over any outstanding shares out there. It's a nice gesture. But
it's a nice gesture, but this stock has peaked.
Yes.
And it peaked hard a couple of years ago. And by a couple of years ago, I mean April 20th, 420, 2019, while I was doing something else, WWE's stock was at $96.71. This was almost a $100 stock at one point. And it was a very hot stock. Even in 2018, it got up to 96. It went down in the middle of 2018 to 65. It went back up to 96. It's not going there again. The market has now taken a look at this. All of the hedge funds that would, ideally, if you were going to own this stock and think you were going to get another rally, would show up and invest in WWE. They've done that. Been there, done that. Got the t-shirt. They might have gotten it at an even better deal than you did. And in this case, you know, if I got this stock, I'd be looking to sell as quickly as possible. When I said to you, I said, oh, it might go down more. I don't know if it's going to go down more, but there are way better things that you could do than
get the cash now because you don't know what it's going to be like later. I'm good with that.
I mean, the dividend is one, so that's like nothing. It's an unimpressive dividend. It's not nothing, but it's an unimpressive dividend that you can get anywhere else. I don't see it appreciating tremendously. We talk about the ratings all the time. The ratings for wrestling are still really low. I know they do well in the demo, but the overall trend line of wrestling viewership is going the wrong direction. And in particular, going back to the actual ratings talk, in particular, it's going the wrong direction for WWE, if you want to talk about the demo. I don't see this stock going back up to 96 again, unless the market essentially does like a mega GameStop with WWE. WWE was like the GameStop of the big legit hedge funds. They pumped it for longer, but it was never a $100 stock. And I don't see a reason why I'll get there again.
In talent news, as seen on this past Monday's Monday Night Raw, it is indeed legitimate. Lacey Evans' husband put another one past the goalie, and she is indeed pregnant, thus pulling her out of this Sunday's Elimination Chamber and other angles for the immediate future. Does Asuka get another opponent on Sunday? And who is it?
Yeah, I think it's Reginald, who is showing a lot of prowess at wrestling women.
Intergender champion Reginald, yes. The sommelier.
He went over strong on Nia Jax, did he not?
Did not hit a single move, but got drop-kicked and got the victory. That was something. Yeah, I to me, there's two choices. You can either put Charlotte back in there, which is a safe choice, I would guess. This would be the time for me to bring out Rhea Ripley and make her part of the Raw roster, because I think she's going to be fighting for this title either way. It's either going to be at WrestleMania against Charlotte, or she's going to be defending it against Charlotte. But I think Rhea Ripley and Charlotte is the call for Mania.
Yeah, I like that. Rhea Ripley and Charlotte at Mania. That's certainly, it'll be a strong, well-worked match. I'm fine with that. Hey, look, the one good thing about the Lacey Evans angle is I think it effectively writes off Flair.
No. I don't know about that. That's the weird thing it may give Slapjack something to do because he's the father, right?
He is the father. Okay. I think the obvious reveal here eventually is that Slapjack has been, what did you say, putting him past the goalpost? Yeah.
Put one past the goal, touch, yes.
Hockey mask, sport reference, touchdown. He did it.
Chris does not know hockey lingo.
No,
he
hit the penalty shot. Got okay. It. Nailed it.
Speaking of the demo, numbers were lower on Wednesday. 747,000 for AEW. 713.
No, it's getting more selective. It's not lower. Wrestling's getting more exclusive and selective. This is part of the quandary of getting eyes on the product. Sometimes you want to hide the product.
The demo was doubled up, though, for AEW. 400,000 in 18 to 49. 202,000 for 18 to 49 for NXT. So
NXT
yes.
Is not cool. I mean, I think is real at this point. We've seen a lot of evidence on this. I understand why 18 to 49, probably even younger than that. Although 18 is actually a really good age. Because imagine if you watched this in your teenage years and you grew up liking NXT and 13, 14-year-old you remembers things like Becky Lynch and Bayley and Sasha. Cool matches with Finn Balor. Shinsuke Nakamura was once cool. Now you're 18, 19, 20, getting ready to go to college, perhaps someday. Who knows? A pandemic will end eventually, maybe, they say. You're getting ready to go to college, though. Shinsuke Nakamura hasn't had a good match, and you don't remember how long at this point. You might have been a freshman in high school. Bayley and Sasha have gone on to do other things. Becky is gone now. Charlotte's been overpushed. And NXT, when you go try to tune on now, it's the main roster with yellow ropes. Makes sense that these once NXT fans would drift over and be looking for something else, something that's a little bit, I don't necessarily think AEW hits it out of the park every single week, but something that's a little bit more reminiscent of the energy that NXT used to have as a show when it was a one-hour show on the network.
There's something with some bite on AEW every week, at least. So you can get yes. through the camp. You can get through the camp, and then you get to the serious angle. The problem with NXT is you turn it on, and you have Dexter Lumis kidnapping people. You have a 2,000-year-old dragon who has taken over and is running Xia Li's career. You have Beth Phoenix yelling random stuff at different times. Now, that being said, this NXT TakeOver Vengeance Day, upper tier for NXT TakeOvers in my book. A fantastic
That's the crazy
show.
Thing about NXT, which is that, yes, the takeovers continue to be really consistently good. And as bad as NXT, the week-to-week presentation, narrative work has been, every time a takeover pops its head out of the water, they manage to cobble together the best stuff that's going on in the program and get those wrestlers to have the best matches they generally can. This NXT TakeOver is a breeze to watch and was a good show from beginning to end.
To get into this, we can intersperse this week's NXT talk within this, I think.
Okay.
Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez winning the Women's Dusty Classic, defeating Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. A fantastic opener. I loved that they were using kind of the WCW circa 1990 ramp for this.
Yes.
Dakota Kai is this generation of women's wrestlers, Mickie James. She is so good at making everybody else look so good and ragdolling herself all over the place, and she doesn't get the credit. And I'm happy that they won this one. Ember and Shotzi were really good, too. Like, Shotzi's a maniac in big match situations, diving all over the place. A little weird having Raquel Gonzalez be the fiery babyface, sort of.
And they're sort of teasing a bit of a turn for Dakota and Raquel.
Yeah, that's a little odd, too, because I thought they should have been in that post in the NXT Wednesday promo. I think they should have been a little bit more sure of themselves, at least Dakota. Dakota kind of backed off a little bit from Shayna. I wanted turned on Tegan Nox Dakota Kai here. Not oh, I remember that and I'm now getting PTSD because of it thing. But this tag match over-delivered, hot opener. And I think probably the right team won due to my logic from last week. Yes, we're going to get the Raquel Nia Jax stare down, depending on what happens on Elimination Chamber, because there is a women's tag match set for that. But yeah, this match over-delivered, I thought.
Yeah, no, I thought the match over-delivered. I don't like the finish. Or I don't like who won. I think that Shotzi Blackheart, I'm not crazy about Shotzi. I grant you that she is willing to take big risks. She's willing to do big spots. I do not think that she does a great job move to move.
I agree.
I think some moves look good, some moves don't. And I think would get very heavily exposed if she was being asked to carry 25, 30 minutes in a singles match at closing a show or near closing a show. And at the same time, I think that so much equity has been put into Shotzi Blackheart in building her up that they need to write around this flaw in her game. And they need to just go all the way with her. And she needed this win, in my opinion, more than Raquel did. I think Raquel and Dakota were fine regardless. I think Raquel was made when she beat Rhea Ripley to that point. That's kind of the whole reason she was like, I can hang with Nia Jax because I beat Rhea Ripley. And she's basically right. I don't think beating Ember and Shotzi here is nearly as big an accomplishment as beating Rhea Ripley was a few weeks ago. So I don't think they needed it. Ember, I think, gets left kind of treading water. Shotzi's the big loser here, in my opinion, out of this. And so I would have went the other way. But I thought the match was great.
Johnny Gargano beat Kushida to retain the North American Championship. Kushida's best outing in NXT by far since he's been on this WWE roster, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, he was inspired, wasn't he? He was going.
That said, the logic you can take issue with, because if you're going to eliminate all the outside interference that Johnny Gargano can use and then still have him win against Kushida, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That said, Johnny Gargano, he's Johnny Takeover, whether he's a babyface or a heel. This match was sublime.
His heel selling's really good, right?
Yes.
Like his heel selling's really good because it plays off of the way he sells as a babyface and like takes a lot of those sort of moves, like the way he'll like kind of guard himself by using his legs. He was doing it in a way in this match where it was heelish and it was really fun. My big problem, kind of building off of your point, was Kushida did so much work on that friggin' arm that Johnny, who is a heel now, and as a heel, he's a coward, should have been tapping at some point. The takeaway for me from this match is, wow, Kushida, the master of the arm breaker, is kind of not very good at breaking arms. And that's
a
problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you, but this match. I'm going to have to rewatch it again.
Rewatch it with that lens, because yeah. I'm with you. Dude, the Kushida has never been this good in NXT. I completely agree on that. I think Johnny, again, to agree with you more, heel selling, awesome. He really has, as good as he has been always as a babyface, and as you and I think, he's a much more natural fit as a babyface. He has really transitioned great into this heel role and has found new nuances in his act in this heel role that's really interesting. It's just, a heel should not be able to go up against a submission master and white knuckle their way through being an arm breaker over and over and over and over again. If it's Rey Mysterio, that's fine. But Johnny is not being Rey Mysterio right now. He's being like, well, they never really made Rey a heel. Or when they did, it was very brief and ill-advised. The point being, Johnny should have tapped, given how much time. After that, the one that was the most egregious was the top rope one.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah, yes. He goes off the top. And that was the umpteenth time he had been in the arm breaker. He should have tapped.
The follow-up was interesting Wednesday with the reuniting of Austin Theory to the Way. It was ridiculous comedy, but I'll allow it in this case.
I'll allow it, but the Way has lost their way in terms. They don't know what I'm saying. Like, the writing on this doesn't seem to really know where the Way stuff is going from week to week. Like, well, you know what, the abduction stuff was Loomis. Why did Loomis let Austin Theory out?
Yeah, that's true.
Pourquoi?
must have had the same security as Marco's stunt.
No, he was watching AEW and he's like, you know what? This is wrong.
It's easy to leave, yes.
I shouldn't be doing this. Dexter Loomis lets him out.
I believe that was the point where we got the greatest music video ever. Cameron Grimes. Sung by, I believe, Josiah Williams, or is it Josiah Williamson? I can't remember the last name offhand. This gimmick has legs, Chris. It has.
I think it's really fun. I'm glad that he, one, it's funny that he like realized that he could make money off GameStop and he made the money. Two, I think it's great that he realized that this to the moon thing is memeable. And we are very much in a memetic culture moment right now, and a gifable culture right now. And Grimes can take his gimmick and port it nicely into this Wall Street Bets subculture and take advantage of that. And I think it, to your point, going back to the wrestling now, getting out of the pop culture part of this, it adds more layers to him, right? He's a heel. He's always been a showboat. He thinks he's the greatest guy in the world. Now he's got a little bit of money, but like, you know, what's great is he can be like, he made himself $100,000, which, you know, I think for a lot of us, you know, $100,000 would be rad. Don't get me wrong. But $100,000 also can disappear much faster than people realize. As many people who get kind of large lump sums of money like that realize oftentimes.
Birdcat.
Yuffie, and one of the longest running angles here at the Novum Brino Cat House is Yuffie and Hazy. Hazy, my 14-year-old oldest cat. Yuffie, my little runt of a cat named Kitten Yuffie, about a year old, but she will never drop this heat with Hazy that she started on day one. And Haze kind of agitates it, so we live. We get by.
Yeah, there's only two ways for it to end. Either he spends all his money on dumb stuff and continues making it, or he loses his money on the stocks. And yeah, so this thing's going to be great. We're going to get a return of Kiss My Grits from 70s.
I think you should hire a bodyguard. I think you should hire Almas. I think it'd be, frankly, it's been okay with AJ. I think the Cameron Grimes and Almas thing would be way better.
MSK, Nash Carter, and Wes Lee defeated the Grizzled Young Veterans, James Drake and Zach Gibson, to win the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Finals on the men's side. Interesting point I did not know. The Grizzled Young Veterans were originally penciled in to win last year's Dusty Cup, but the but the Pete Dunne, Matt Riddle, what was it, the Broserweights caught fire So they went with the hot hand. This was a moves match, but it was a love letter to tag team wrestling. I loved that. This might be my match of the year already. And it's going to be hard to top it. They did James Drake doing the Doomsday Device to the outside was insane. They did the Bad Company slingshot into a thrust kick, MSK did, and I marked hard for that because I love that move when Diamond and Tanaka did it. It's one of my favorite tag team moves ever. Wesley doing the dive to the outside was insane. This thing was all over the place, and I loved every moment of it. A great, great tag team match. It's hard for me to say anything other than this was great.
Oh, yeah, this is great. This is another one, though, I felt like the wrong team won. MSK is a great team, and I think they will be... I'll walk that back. They are a very good team on the way to being great. I don't think they are great yet, and I think that journey up to great is one of the most compelling parts of any wrestler's career. So rushing it, you don't want to make it drag out for too long, but rushing it, I also think, can often be at a disservice. And in this case, I don't think the personality is there for Nash, Carter, and Wesley yet. And Grizzly Young veterans have the personality. I think at some point this year they will be tag champions. But I also think that they're due for an era where we really get it here in the U.S. on the NXT U.S. show, really get the grizzled young veterans that we were getting over on NXT UK.
Agreed. I the personality for me for MSK is a hindrance right now because they're just telling bad
they're
jokes.
They're almost grating. Yes. I thought for a brief spurt of the promo this week that they were almost heelish. They weren't.
A little bit.
And I realized they weren't fairly quickly, but yeah, even the thing with eating popcorn with Beth Phoenix, they have like uncool baby face syndrome.
Oh, that was not fun. Did not enjoy that.
It wasn't Beth's idea either, to be clear. It's just like a stupid... They make their baby faces uncool.
Yeah, I don't disagree. That's the sad thing. But I don't think the grizzled young veterans were hurt by this in any way either. I mean, they were so great in this thing.
They're going to be champions regardless. I mean, I think both these teams will be champion teams regardless, you know. So
let me circle back to Kushida because we're kind of talking NXT at the same time here. The point of Malcolm Bivens being around there is he's going to try and sell out Tyler Rust to get Kushida and end up with nothing, right? Is that what we're going for here?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't really know where the Rust angle is going right now. I think maybe Bivens is going to ultimately get Rust a tag team partner and move Rust into the tag division.
Okay. I'll go through a couple other things from NXT TV before I go back to the Vengeance review. Leon Ruff sneaking one past Isaiah Swerve Scott. Interesting choice.
Yeah. It was... Look, Ruff needs something to be a legitimate character, and he is a champion, and you can't just have... The way they have presented the North American Championship, you can't just have even Leon Ruff just be a pushover of a character. He's got to be presented with some degree of heft.
Mm-hmm. This Casey Catanzaro, Caden Carter versus Aaliyah and Jesse Kamea match. Can Xia Li just put all of them out eventually, please?
They need to stop letting Casey do the promos. That pipsqueak voice of hers.
Yeah.
It just... She delivers this dialogue that does not work with her pipsqueak voice. And maybe there's a way to make it work. I don't know. I haven't really thought about what the right tone, word choice wise, is for her tone of voice, but it ain't this.
Zoe Stark gets an official debut after being in the Dusty Classic. She's okay. I think that finishing move is... I like a good GTS. Don't get me wrong. It's a little too clever by half with the flip, and you can't do that with a certain size of woman.
No.
So she's only going to be able to do that with, like, the Casey Catanzaros of the world.
What I was thinking about is I thought the job girl did a tremendous job getting that finish over.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... to that point, I think that that's an issue. I mean, I thought Zoe Stark, they did a good job putting her over. She's got a good look. The limb length is different, and that's cool. And it good heft to it. The finish, I agree. Too cute by half is a great way of putting it. The flippy thing, like Nia Jax ain't doing that.
Yeah, she's not lifting up like Shayna and doing that. It's going to be, you know, the tiny, you know, Aaliyah, Casey Catanzaro, maybe Caden Carter. You can do it with them. She's not going to be able to do that with Jesse Kamiya even. So,
no.
Yeah, that's going to be weird. Back to Vengeance in what was a little bit of a disappointment, but still a good match. Io Shirai retained the NXT Women's Championship against Mercedes Martinez and Toni Storm. They went home early. They originally had 20 minutes. They went home after 12. I have not heard why, but I think the table had a lot to do with it. That table falling apart, and they just went on with it because I think that was supposed to be a climax. Thought Mercedes was quite good in this match. Thought Tony was good in this match, and Io's always fantastic. There was just something about... It felt like there was half a match in there, and that I didn't get the rightful conclusion in some ways, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, look, there were a lot of sequences in there that I thought were fine. I have not been able to fully sink my teeth into Mercedes Martinez's story. Not, like, I'm familiar with her work, and she's good. But the story that they're trying to tell right now, I think it's fully formed. The Toni Storm, Mercedes heat, it was kind of rushed. I just think they tried to get into this match too soon. And to your point that you just brought up, it was rushed. It was rushed in the build-up, and then it was rushed in the execution. And you felt the rush.
Agree on all counts. And then finally, speaking of rushed angles, this is what the aftermath of this feels like to me. But Finn Balor defeated Pete Dunne in a manly match.
Oh, man.
For the NXT Championship.
What a match that was.
This was a little throwbacky. This is a little work the limbs, punch, kick type stuff. I dug this. The big angle at the end, of course. Finn Balor comes to help after 1 and 2 come out to try and beat up Finn. Adam Cole super kicks Finn Balor and then super kicks Kyle O'Reilly. The follow-up Wednesday, Adam Cole beats up Kyle O'Reilly some more. I think this thing has had legs where you could have paused this out. Maybe Cole's just...
We're like 4 weeks into this story, and we're like, you know, one day removed from TakeOver. They went to way too many beats. Like, there should have been the beat where Balor was actually in the Undisputed Era. There should have been an episode of NXT where everyone in the newly minted Undisputed Era is standing tall. And then in week 2, after we have the like truly minted new Undisputed Era, Cole suddenly betrays the whole thing. And it's why?
I think even before that, there should have been a week where you're hanging out together, and everybody's cool, but you can just see something's bothering Adam Cole. And Adam Cole just says something snarky about O'Reilly and Finn's relationship. And how, you know, we didn't need him before when it was us, et cetera, or something to that effect. Or how his pride's hurt because Kyle O'Reilly's getting all these title chances. or whatever it is. And then it builds from there. And then after the super kick on O'Reilly, Roddy needs to be conflicted here. Roddy, you don't know which way Roddy's going to go.
Roddy's motivations right now really suck, right?
Well, because Roddy is always the guy who turns on people anyways, because that's how he joined the Undisputed Era. You should look at him and go, okay, what's he going to do? Because, you know, Roddy's always been kind of interested in Roddy versus being a member of the team, per se. You should have all that. And I thought the Finn accidental kick ruined that a little.
Yes, because now it's like miscommunications, or it's like partially, it's either going to be baby faces who just can't quite get on the same page, which is not really intriguing, or it's going to be Roddy turns on Finn because he thinks that Adam's his friend.
Because now, the interesting thing there, let me cut you off because I wanted to get to that too, is if Roddy sides with Adam Cole, and Adam Cole is either a lone wolf or has taken Pat McAfee's money to run the Kings of NXT, and we get a three-way between O'Reilly, Roddy, and Adam. That would intrigue me, but I think we're just getting Adam and Roddy on their own, probably with Bobby Fish. I don't know if Fish is coming back for the angle or not. I don't know what his injury status is. But to me, the interesting thing is a three-way between the three members of the Undisputed Era.
Yes, I think there's some intrigue. Yeah, having the actual members or the founding members kind of all square off. I think there's some intrigue in Fish coming back and betraying O'Reilly, although I think people will see that coming from a mile away. It's almost too obvious. You know, he comes back, is he my friend? And of course he's not. Fish would have to cut the promo of his life, like a Mark Henry in the salmon suit level promo. Ooh. To get us to bite into the idea, like, Bobby Fish loves his friend Kyle O'Reilly, would never ever betray him, and then betray him.
Or Bobby Fish teams with Roddy and hates both Cole and O'Reilly for doing this to their group. When it was like, hey, this is our meal ticket.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, almost nothing, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
And then Roddy has the additional thing of, hey, I turned on Pete Dunne to join you guys, and now Adam Cole's joining with Pete Dunne and one and two, and Pat McAfee, whose ass he beat in War Games and in a match. And yeah, there's a lot of cool intrigue that could go here, but it just got rushed. I think it's going to be your basic. Yeah, O'Reilly and Finn are going to take on everybody else in some way.
Crazy to me, because this was really like this is the big angle of the show for the last, you know, year plus. This undisputed angle, this undisputed era thing, they really glued the show together with this thing. This is the rug that held the dude's room together, man. It's a valued beverage.
let's get through AEW and NXT UK real quick, because I don't have a lot of notes. I only had like one note for each. AEW, that Serena Deeb match knocked me on my ass, dude. This is what I want women's wrestling to be. She was a grappler in this match as opposed to doing the choreography. Now, look, I've been on record of this. I have a little bit of problem with mixing the Joshi types with the Serena Deeb, Britt Baker types, because I think it confuses the tone type of thing. Like watching the Japanese tournament, which was unfortunate because the only people who won were people who had appeared in AEW before, and I get that. But watching this match, if Rio were not dressing in the frilly skirts and stuff like that, I'd take her a little bit more seriously. Serena Deeb was a monster in this match, and I loved it.
I continue to be just wowed by Serena Deeb and her work at this point. Because she was always, she was fine.
Yeah,
you know?
She was okay.
But like she's great now. I mean, she is a champion level wrestler. She is one of the best active working wrestlers in any company right now.
And to think WWE only wanted her to be a trainer.
Yes.
That's what's ridiculous to me. It's a lot like the Sarah Del Rey story to me, because Sarah Del Rey still had stuff to give, but she wasn't quote-unquote WWE material, whatever the hell that means, and I think we all know what that means. But, yeah, she was like female, I won't go so far as to say female Kurt Angle, but her offense was tough. You know, I thought she sold the knee particularly well, even though she has a legit injury to the knee, but she was selling that thing like I believe like she couldn't continue at one point, because I've had my knee give out on me like that, and I was like, that's how you walk, that's how you're doing it if you have a torn ACL or something. I thought she had torn something at some point.
I liked, you know, one point where Riho briefly touches the knee and Deeb's like, let's go in the headlock immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or maybe it's a courting hold. But like, yeah, I mean, she'd like go immediately. Like, it's good stuff, man. She's very good.
Very good stuff. My only other note, we're getting Tully Blanchard in the ring in a six-man with Marco. Like, my dream's coming true, Chris. I'm hyped because I get a Tully Blanchard match,
okay,
which I never thought I'd see.
No, I want to be happy for you, but I got to tell you, Jeff, and I'm telling you this as your friend, that I don't know why I put a question mark on that. But I'm telling you this. They're going to make this match stupid and gimmicky, and there is going to be lots and lots and lots of Skittles in this match.
I agree. I get it. Tully's not going to do a moonsault. Maybe. You never know. I mean,
he's going to pile drive Marco. And Marco's going to sell the hell of it.
All I want, Chris, all I want is the broken neck pile driver spot. That's all I want. I want Marco in traction. I want Marco in a body cast. I want them to eventually like do comedy with the body cast where they're like rolling him down a hill and he falls in the ocean and he sinks. And he comes back next week. I want Marco Stunt's character to die in some way.
You want him to be Kenny from South Park.
Yes. Yes. I want him to be Super Dave Osborne or whatever. His presence angers me on screen, which if he were a heel would be fine, but he's a babyface. I want 5 minutes with a leather strap. I want 5 minutes alone. I want something. But I especially want a pile driver on Marco Stunt, please. That's all I want for Christmas, AEW. Mookie, get on this.
And I continue to like Jack Perry. I think Jack Perry's got a lot to offer. Luchasaurus, the gimmick's too self-aware and too... It's too ironic to really get this guy over, and he's got chops, but the mask reveal was unimpressive. I'll put it that way.
Was the FMW gimmick match earned?
It did kind of feel like it was out of nowhere, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And, you know, Kenny didn't bring the gravitas with the, gravitas. My southern came out there. Gravitas! The gravitas.
Gravitas is what keeps our butts on the ground.
Oh, my inner hick sometimes comes out. Me talk good one day. I still have problems with the Kenny character. But the Good Brothers aren't helping. So.
No, the Bullet Club, Good Brothers, I have problems with the Kenny character as well. This is another angle that is too self. I mean, all the stupid joke with the TV. I'm sorry. It was good 1 week. But at a certain point, you're like some of these people on the internet who have exactly 5 jokes. And like, if you tell the TV joke over and over and over again, are you really that much better than the person you're doing the jokes on.
The joke, and also it just, the hot and cold slash duality of man thing that Kenny's doing with the Bucks, and Don Callis is having the good brothers go out there and make sure that that nobody helps the Young Bucks, but at the same time, you know, pretending like he's still a friend and kind of going the yes, yes, yes. And then when Kenny turns away, he gets angry or whatever, kind of playing that up. I'm just, it's a little too campy for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's the weird, Kenny is twisted in his emotional state over this, but he's not. And then, like, the other question here is, what do Callis and the Good Brothers want from the Bucks? Like, what is the point of creating this phony baloney Bullet Club reunion? It's never been particularly clear to me. It's like they're writing this from week to week, and it very much reeks of that.
NXT UK, that Joe Coffey,
Rampage Brown?
Rampage Brown, yeah. Rashi Brown is somebody else. That was a manly match right there.
Sure was. Yeah, Coffey.
Slabs of beef slapping each other, throwing each other around. I was a little surprised at the end. I got to be honest with you. I did not expect him to win clean like that. It's an interesting choice in many, many ways, which I like. I like interesting choices, but I thought
the thing that actually really gave Brown the most touch at the end of that stiff match was Coffey just recognizing that he'd been beaten clean as a shit. Like, that was good for Coffey because it, like, baby-faced him. It does give us, of course, as the fans, the feel-good moment of sportsmanship and the tradition and all that crap. But the other thing is, it gets over the idea, like, you know, Rampage Brown's really formidable. Like, he's got Joe Coffey's respect, and Joe Coffey's one of these guys where if he doesn't like you, he'll tell you. So I thought they did a really good job with that.
It gets over their previous friendship that we've seen in the vignettes. It humbles Joe Coffey a little bit, who was just kind of blowing off Brown in said vignettes. It makes Brown a threat. It makes Joe Coffey a much more well-rounded character, in my opinion, is that he's a guy who will get his butt kicked and admit, okay, I was wrong to blow you off. Here you go. It's a welcome thing in professional wrestling to me to have that kind of depth in a heel character, even though Gallus is a little bit tweenery because Imperium's always going to be kind of the big bad around there. But yeah, the rest of this show, you know, the UK Cup or what, the Commonwealth Cup or what do they call it?
Yeah, the Heritage Cup.
Heritage Cup. Nothing for me. I don't care about Shea Sam. I gotta be honest.
No, I mean, did anyone really think that Shaw Samuels had
Shaw.
Any?
Yeah.
I know. Well, you look at it and you see Shea, and yeah, no, I get it. No one thought that he had a chance of winning this match, and they really gave it away when he got the arm lock on again, and it was saved by the bell. But this is another one of these examples. At least it's a heel doing it onto a baby face, so you expect some heart. But if someone's like the master of the submission hold, you know, and they get a submission hold on early, you expect them to finish it out relatively quickly thereafter. And that's the one kind of hole that exists in this rounds format. I applaud them for trying something different. I think the 3-minute section thing does a lot, but like at the end of the day, does Shaw Samuels really need a 14-minute match? And I'd argue no, he doesn't.
I love Kaylee Ray. I love Mako Satomura. I did not like this press conference vignette at all. It didn't hit one of the two notes that you need for a pro wrestling style thing here. Either you do it purely straight and you ask really good questions to both people, which these were not. This was, how do you feel about fighting her? How do you think?
You said that you wanted to be the best. If you beat her, would that make you the best?
Yes. Or you need someone here really healing it up, and they don't want to do that with Kaylee Ray because she's kind of doing a quasi face turn here, and they don't want to do this with the final boss Mako Satomura because she has such a presence there and her presence is fantastic, but she should be Dolph Lundgren in Rocky IV. I think she, I came here to win. I must break Kaylee Ray.
You are a little girl, and I am here to disabuse you of your fantasy of being the best. You're not. No, at some point, she should have turned on Kaylee Ray. And it doesn't have to be a forever heel turn, right? No. Like, this can just be a heel turn going into the match. But if you're going to have Kaylee Ray, who's on a quasi-face turn, and I think, you know, I think she's turning face, ultimately. So, like, if you have her on this trajectory, you need Mako to at least go heel for the context of this match. And at the end, she can go just like Joe Coffey did with Rampage Brown and shake hands.
You know what it is? It's Asuka when she first came to NXT.
Yeah.
When she entered into the program with Bayley. You knew she was healing it up quite a bit. She was a badass, but you knew everybody was going to like her because she's such a badass. And had such a vicious offensing. Mako Satomura should come in and go, all these other women you've wrestled in NXT UK are nothing compared to me. That's not dissing them. I am on a whole nother level. You saw me, and she could throw back to wasn't the finals of the Mae Young, but it was the final four. Watch that on the network. Look at what I can do to people. Look at what I did to big names in this business in that tournament. I am going to run through you like a hot knife through butter. And there's nothing you can do about it. And Kaylee's personal pride then can react to that stuff. Yeah, this to me was dull. And that's the biggest mistake to do with one of these things.
No, and it's so weird because normally Kaylee Ray has not quite Becky Lynch level swagger, but like close. And
I'd say even better. When she's evil, when she's bad and she has the swagger, you believe she's a bad woman.
Yes, and here, I mean, again, you're trying to get her over as a babyface and wanting to be
so
the best.
I'm so honored to fight her. And, you know, I know, she's
where's
such a
the
legend
weird
in this business.
Becky Lynch, like, I'm going to crush history, like, you're a statue and I'm going to break you. I mean, that's my thing. I'd want Mako talking about how she's history, and I'd want Kaylee Ray talking about how she's going to tear down history and erase it and put her own name in the books.
She should be Randy Orton here. She said, I'm going to kill the legend. And I'm going to make my own here.
Option B, have them both, quote unquote, go heel on each other and just build a friggin' fight.
Yes. Build the hate. Build the professional courtesy and make it all a facade. And then they just start taking little digs at each other. Like Kaylee Ray goes, well, you know, she's a lot older than she used to be when she was at her peak. I loved you on Nitro. Yeah, do that. Come on. Bring it on.
That was in color, right, Mako?
Yes, gosh, that's all I want. Build the fight. That's all they had to do here, and they couldn't do that. And it just, I swear to God, I think Ginny was one of the reporters, and maybe Piper Niven was another one, which also didn't help.
Joseph Connors has long been noted as a high quality journalist.
Oh, dear Lord, don't no. We're not, that never happened, and it's not gonna do this. But that's all I have for NXT UK. Ben Carter had a pretty good match. He's going to be.
Ben Carter. I think he's a pretty good guy. Josh Morrell, real fun pairing for Ben Carter. Josh Morrell continues to be. I think it's a great role for this guy to be getting TV time in. Mm-hmm. Another weird observation. He has a really great haircut for being a mid-level up-and-comer jobber, because he'll eventually become a fully formed product, at which point he'll either cut his hair shorter or his hair will have grown out longer so that he's like an actual long hair wrestler dude. Like, yeah, he's got the weird mid-range hair thing that's transitional.
It's just long enough to sell the selling is what it is right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like if mullets were back in style. Almost. Yeah. And your girl, any thoughts on your girl, Nina Samuels, in this feud?
If she wins,
Xia Brookside is going to be her Chuck Taylor for a month.
I feel like that's what has to happen, right? Like, I don't, because the alternative was what? Nina Samuels has to, what's the stipulation if she loses?
Give up the first quarter of her paycheck like Matt Hardy.
A hot angle that is. God, who can't sink their teeth into that one?
I would assume that maybe Zaya pulls a, oh, you didn't read the fine print. If you lose, you have to be my valet for 30 days, and comedy ensues.
Okay. I could, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't have any thoughts. This is a stupid angle. It's gone on for a really long time, and I don't think Zaya Brookside is really benefiting from this.
No.
I mean, that's
she should be like, pushed to the moon, and she's not benefiting from this.
No, yeah, she should be going up against, like, a Mako Satomura or whatever. And
yeah, she should be getting built right now for Mako, because Mako should beat Kaylee Ray.
So I guess my prediction then is that she beats Nina Samuels, because I'm assuming, I don't know, maybe they do keep her in this infinity loop with Nina Samuels, but I assume that she does need to move on.
Chris, I just want someone to root for. A nice, pure baby face. And that brings us to the main roster and this ridiculous SmackDown tonight. Raw was... meh. There's nothing on Raw that I really want to bring up, to be honest with you, other than speculating once we get to the EC preview. But this SmackDown... everybody's a little bit heelish. Except Daniel Bryan, and even Daniel Bryan's a little heelish. I mean, we had... let me get this straight. Okay, we had Rey and Dominic winning by cheating for the past few weeks, and then they get in there with Otis and Chad Gable, and now Otis is a heel, but remember, we turned Tucker heel to make Otis a better babyface, but now we're going to turn Otis heel because we decided to bail out on that story. Big E is kind of a douchebag. I hate to say that. I know that they're trying something with this uber confident showing his personality type thing, but he did the wrestling equivalent of cock blocking to
he brings out his own couch,
Apollo,
so that he can sit on it to make fun of Apollo. And during this time, he is wearing neon colored, bright, ostentatious clothing. He's got no shoes on. And if it was the 1980s and I described all of these things, you'd think I was talking about a heel.
He's clowning him is what he's doing. He's eating a TV dinner on his couch with bare feet because, oh, he doesn't deserve this. And he's getting involved in the guy's feud with Nakamura. And he's not doing it because he's doing the right thing. He's doing it because he doesn't like Apollo Crews anymore. And that just doesn't make sense either. It's not like, no, Apollo, I'm not going to allow you to do this. You're get over it, man. Stop.
Yeah, you're not
going to
get a rematch. I mean, that's the weirdest thing is Big E's the champion here, and he's trolling Apollo that Apollo can't get a rematch with Big E, which, I mean, it makes reasonable sense, motivationally speaking, why Apollo would want to continue to chase any title, especially like this mid-card Intercontinental Championship he thinks he's got a right to. And also, like, it makes sense why Apollo would start to really hate Big E. Yes, he kind of took, you know, the wrong way to get there initially, but Big E is goading him on.
Mm-hmm. We have Sasha and Bianca just acting. I hate this, Chris. You can't root for either of them because they are so snarky to one another and so passive aggressive. And Sasha's coming off worse. That's the problem. She was a big star when she got the title, and now she's acting petulant with the snarky laugh and everything.
But then also Bianca's gimmick with the EST thing, mm-hmm. it implies a false sense of superiority. And I thought when Nia and Shayna were doing their promo, which is a scripted promo, they're just saying the lines they're supposed to be saying here. But when they're talking about, like, do you really think Bianca is tougher than me? I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I don't actually think that Bianca's tougher than Shayna Baszler.
Promo, look, I'll get to one part in a second, but just the start of that with Nia and Shayna trying to fit through the door.
And doing that gag multiple times, Jeff, just to make sure that we understood
that Nia's fat. Yeah.
That she's fat. And then to put over later on that she's the hot one, again, to kind of get over that she's fat. It's...
You get Reginald involved in this. This is weird. You get Aunt Pam, who... the ridiculous turtleneck with the cleavage and the midriff cut out, but the turtleneck intact.
So weird, right?
I am here for this unrepentant stupidity, but I have my limits, WWE. I do. Her insistence on everybody using the door killed me. Her having to wrestle in street clothes was ridiculous in many ways. And
The door thing is only funny because Bailey like really gets upset about it. Where it's like, use the door, you idiot.
I love Bailey, but don't kill her. Please don't kill her.
So many of these things don't make sense. So, like, why does she book Nia and Shayna? And then, like, for example, why does Bailey only bring out the one chair for Nia and Shayna? Like, to what end for that? There's just, like, there were half and quarter jokes stacked on top of half and quarter jokes and no real kind of thinking about, like, how one thing interacts with the next thing. And, yeah, I thought everyone involved in this segment, from Bailey and Sasha, whose entire feud felt really trivialized during the course of this dialogue, to Nia and Shayna, where I guess Shayna, we got over that she's tough, but we got over that Shayna's tough at the expense of Bianca Belair, who's supposed to be the toughest, and we sort of poked a hole in that. Nia Jax is supposed to be a monster heel, and we did not one. But, you did one fat joke with the door twice, so yes, I'll count that as just one. But we did two different fat jokes with Nia Jax. And then we have Sami Mollier, intergender astronaut, exploring the new frontiers of intergender wrestling. Not since Joey Ryan has there been such a pioneer. Sami Mollier comes out and then pins Nia Jax, who's supposed to be the monster heel. So
without
doing
the move, he's not allowed to do a move on the women. You'll notice this because this is main roster edict is that if you have any kind of, so he's doing these ridiculous flips, and even Corey Graves goes, I don't understand the logic of that, but it looked impressive. and then the aftermath with Carmella. At least Carmella was smart and goes, do you not think I was watching what was going on this entire time?
Well, can you blame Sammy, though? Because half the time on this show, people have no idea what's going on out in the ring. So this time, Carmella knows about it. And all she's been doing is, as far as I can tell, is staring at herself in the mirror.
Sammy is smitten with Sasha Banks. And there is no more natural feeling in the world to be smitten by a gorgeous woman like Sasha Banks. I understand. It's a very middle school vibe when you're trying to impress the pretty girl in the class by doing weird things to get attention. I understand this. I'm for this, but don't bring Carmella Merlot or whatever. She's not drinking any Merlot. You still have a job to do as a sommelier, and you should do it. But
being a sommelier is a time honored tradition.
You are like a boxed Franzia, and Nia Jax gets angry over this.
The other thing is the accent. The accent is horrible.
Oh, it's terrible. I like that it's terrible. That's the problem. Because I'm a man who can't do accents all that well.
Okay,
so I appreciate it.
I think
it's a commitment to the bit, Chris. Come on, you gotta love that.
I do. As a man who mangles the accents of politicians on a regular basis over it, don't worry about the government. I do appreciate that. But like tonight, he said so many words, and he was clearly slipping out of the French patois.
I am the Frenchman.
Yeah.
What he needs to do is really play it. I was like, I am. How do you say? Yeah, you should do. How do you say?
Oh, you mean like Alec Baldwin's wife with asparagus or whatever?
How do you say zucchini?
Hilaria? Yeah, yeah. Invoke a little Hilaria in his performance. I'm into it.
How you Americans say this, Franzia?
The
bottles
thing,
and James wine cooler. What do you say?
I got one story. I had someone give me no English the other day when I was looking for this orange cat. I went up to him and I was like, hey, have you seen the orange cat? And he looks at me and then he goes, no English. I'm like, You know what orange cat means. Bullshit. Anyways,
I pretended not to understand English when I was hit up for money.
Well, that would be one. I wasn't hitting him up for an orange cat. I don't want him to give me one.
No, but no, I'm just giving you an example. I've pretended that I can't speak English before, and I pulled it off, which was amazing in so many ways.
I almost like tried to butcher Spanish, like puedes leer un gato naranja or whatever. Like I was like threw it back at, like, really, we're gonna go orange cat? We have no clue. Come on.
Yeah. Was there anything on Raw you wanted to bring up?
No, Raw sucked. I got nothing on Raw, man.
All right, then we will end it with our Elimination Chamber preview as of post time. There are only, oh well, no, they put this match back in on the Wikipedia.
Okay.
For some reason, they put Asuka versus Lacey Evans back on the Wikipedia for some reason, which is interesting. So
maybe Peyton Royce takes the spot. I totally brain farted on this, but Peyton Royce would be a good person to take the spot and just kind of take over this whole angle.
Peyton's spot during that entire promo thing was interesting.
Sure was. Yeah.
Yeah. She's dead because she did a terrible entrance once, and now they won't forgive her for it right now, so they're making him go through this. Billy Kay.
Oh my God, She got goobered, though. Like the
she
whole.
She came out as a cat, and there was no reason for that tag match between, because nobody cares about Tamina and Natty. As a killer.
This young Tamina, she's an up-and-comer. I'm glad that we got over her offense.
And the Riot Squad is the only legit team in the division, and they get beat all the time. So, I just don't understand what they're doing with this women's tag thing.
But I don't get it. I don't get why you beat the Riot Squad, especially to Natty and Tamina, because, like, Natty and Tamina are the two people that you beat on a regular basis, especially heel Natty. Like, heel Natty, I mean, they beat her all the time.
We will start with the WWE Raw Women's Championship, Asuka versus Lacey Evans. I think I've made my call. I think the easy call here is it's going to be Charlotte, probably with Rick, and probably helping her win the title, because I think they're just going to move Rick over to Charlotte now and try and fuse that again. And hopefully then Rhea comes in and challenges Charlotte. But I could also see this being re-debut of Rhea as part of the Raw roster going in there against Asuka, but I don't know if she wins. I think she should, probably. And, you know, I think Asuka's been a great champ, and it might be time to drop the belt after almost a year. But what do you have for this Raw Women? Who's the Raw Women's Championship when it's all said and done, Chris?
I'm going to say Asuka retains. I'm going to stick with my prediction of we insert Peyton Royce into this angle.
I'm fine. I like Peyton. Okay. WWE Women's Tag Team titles are on the line. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler taking on Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. Chris, was Wednesday all a swerve and we're going to have Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair visiting NXT? Or is something else going to happen? I'm going to call my shot. I think Sasha Banks walks out on Bianca and that starts the build for WrestleMania.
Yeah, no, I think we have been kind of establishing that Sasha's going to be the heel in their match and that we're going to try to make Bianca at Mania. At least that's a tentative plan right now. Who knows? Plans change going into the Mania weekend sometimes. People lose who should win. But I'm with you. I don't think they win the titles. I don't think they're doing that arc with them, because I do think that what we saw with Nia and Shayna and Raquel Gonzalez and everything, I think that that's where we're going over there on NXT.
Bobby Lashley with the injured MVP, at least from what I saw, that knee shot, I thought he had torn his, at least a patella or a ACL. Have not heard an update on him yet, so that might be something. Did you see that injury on Monday?
I did see that injury. Yeah, here's the thing with knees, though. It's like sometimes you can tweak something and it looks really bad, and then like a day later, you're like, I'm not sure what that was, and I didn't like the way it felt, but I feel okay-ish now.
This card is somewhat subject to possibly change, because Keith Lee may be out with a medical issue or COVID. Don't know. Haven't heard anything official, but he's scheduled to be in it. He was not on Raw this past week, and Matt Riddle is scheduled to be in here. Who retains? Who retains? Well, the only person with the title retains, dummy. Does Bobby Lashley retain?
I'm going to say yes. I feel like the triple threat match is often a vehicle for a heel retention without really beating either babyface. And while I think they like Keith Lee, and I think they do, you know, want to do bigger and better things with Keith Lee, I don't think they want to do bigger and better things with him prior to Mania season. And Vince loves Bobby Lashley. And unlike some of the other people Vince has liked through the years, Bobby Lashley is deserving of the fondness. He's actually good. And I don't think Vince likes Riddle.
He's my favorite character on Raw right now because he's such a badass. And he wears a suit well, but he's a badass, and I like badasses in wrestling. I want more of
him. Yeah, I still just remember that really great run of his in TNA around 2013, mm-hmm. and ever since then I've completely changed my tune on this dude. Where I'm like, he's got the only thing he doesn't have is the promo, but like he's got the in ring work and he's got the look. I like Lashley a lot.
For the WWE Universal Championship match later in the night. Jey Uso versus Kevin Owens versus King Corbin versus Sami Zayn versus Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan. There's only one winner here, and it has to be Kevin Owens, right? I toyed with the thought maybe Jey Uso wins this, and then Roman destroys him to show that he has no loyalties. But I think it has to be another KO, wins this title. Uso probably beats him up, so he's injured for the match, and the match happens right afterwards. Spear 1-2-3. I think that's what happens here, don't you?
Yeah, that's a good one. I was leaning towards Daniel Bryan, but a similar situation where it's like we then beat down Daniel Bryan, and you know.
I think the problem with Daniel Bryan winning is that they really don't want to overshadow the Edge Roman Reigns build here, and I think that would turn off a lot of people to have him get beat by Roman Reigns.
The funnier moments on SmackDown commentary tonight was when Edge really spilled the beans that he will not be facing off against Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. It was like, that'd be a great match to happen someday.
Yeah. This is obviously going to try and get more heat on Roman. So I think the guy to get more heat on is, as much as I like Sami Zayn as a knucklehead, Kevin Owens getting...
You know what? This could be another Jey Uso wins thing, though. Jey Uso knuckles through this, and then we get a skitlet where Roman, like, abuses Jey Uso a whole bunch.
Or finger poke a doom.
Yeah, but, like, I think we'll see Jey Uso not... Jey Uso wins the match. He works his ass off to win the match. Roman comes down, and Roman once again erases all of his in-ring accomplishments and expects Jey Uso to, like, eat the shit sandwich. And he does, but he hates it.
I got KO winning this and probably Edge making the save after the title match. I think that's going to be the natural thing, and he declares for WrestleMania. And he points, and we forget about this Kevin Owens story, and we move on to old man Edge, who is moving a bit slow tonight, I thought. But that's, you know.
On this day, he moves slowly. Oh, dear.
All right. And for on the other side, for the WWE Championship, a little bit of a lineup change from Monday. Drew McIntyre versus AJ Styles versus Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton versus Sheamus versus Kofi Kingston in the Elimination Chamber.
What year is it?
It's 2013, I think.
Okay.
Miz
sounds
drops,
like a hot angle.
Miz drops out. Kofi wins a match against... Kofi Kingston wins his way into the Elimination Chamber. Hurts his knee. Chris, is Kofi going to be staying in this match?
Oh, and we replaced Kofi with someone else?
Yes.
Ooh, I'm into that. And you know what? I would...
I have four people it could be. So continue. Okay.
All right. I was almost going to say I think that person wins, but then I keep going like, no, they're building like Sheamus and McIntyre. But hit me with your four people. Maybe that'll change my mind.
Now, the four people who could replace Kofi Kingston in this match by hook or by crook have all been logically set up in some way. Well, three of them have. One of them has not. I'm just thinking of three people. Let me think. Two. Okay. Anywho, the first one is Mustafa Ali taking the place that Kofi took for him in that elimination chamber to go through it. But if Mustafa Ali is in this match, he's getting run through.
He's not winning, and that's all just a setup for the Kofi and Mustafa Ali match at Mania.
Second is a wild card way off the board that probably won't happen, but I think would be a hell of an idea. Bobby Lashley loses the United States title early in the night, gets mad about it, kills Kofi, takes his place in the chamber.
I'm into that. I'm pro that. And look, I'm pro Lashley and McIntyre as your main event in WrestleMania. Like, that's a great
angle.
Let's say
he loses by Riddle pinning Keith Lee. So he never lost the title, really. He gets mad about it, and he gets elevated by getting put in the Elimination Chamber. I'm for that, I think. That gets him out of the mid-card feud into the main event feud. Third, another one no one's talked about yet, but a possibility. Brock Lesnar returns for some reason as a former WWE champion to a fairly empty arena. I don't see this happening. But
I don't see this happening. Here's the other problem. I think Brock's return is going to be as a babyface, and it's going to be against Roman. And Brock's going to come back. Paul Heyman talking and correcting commentary tonight that he is not that Roman Reigns is not his client, that he works for Roman Reigns, like that inversion of the power dynamic or whatever. My client Brock Lesnar, only he, you know, now I represent the tribal chief. Oh, I think that sets up a very natural dynamic between Roman and Brock eventually.
I have a fifth one too, so that I'm going to add at the end of this, but it's a little bit also off the beaten path, but it makes sense. Okay, fourth one. Set up a little bit on Raw on Monday. Braun Strowman decides Kofi's too weak to perform. He's kind of been a little heelish. He threatened violence on Shane McMahon and causing havoc if he didn't get his way. Braun Strowman gets added into the Elimination Chamber.
That'd be interesting. He threatened Adam Pearce.
That too.
Yeah.
And the fifth option, Kofi gets into the pod. He's grabbing his knee. He's acting hurt. The lights go out. Kofi disappears. And the Fiend is put into the Elimination Chamber to take Randy Orton out.
Okay. I'll give you a sixth option. Shane McMahon inserts himself into the Elimination Chamber and wins it.
All right. Anywho, any of those possibilities for your pick can happen. I'm just laying that out there.
Okay.
I'm also laying out the possibility that at the end of the night here, while Drew McIntyre retains the championship in the Elimination Chamber, that the person he last beats, perhaps Sheamus, ends up giving him an extra brogue kick or an RKO, and then Miz comes down to take the glory, 1, 2, 3, and you have both Sheamus and Drew McIntyre chasing Miz for the next pay-per-view. And that helps build the Drew-Sheamus feud by way of Miz.
Next pay-per-view WrestleMania?
No, there's one in March. There's one in early March before WrestleMania. So we have then, that way we get the briefcase off of Miz before a year end, because I believe Money in the Bank comes very soon after WrestleMania. I thought the date was moved at one point, but don't get me wrong. But you have that as an option too in all these. So having all those said, I will give my pick while you think about this and marinate a bit. I do think Kofi Kingston is taken out by Mustafa Ali. I think that's going to happen. And I think Mustafa Ali is going to have every finisher put on him and going to get jobbed out like a geek in this match. I think Drew McIntyre does retain the title in the actual match itself. And I do believe Miz is going to be a transitional champion at the end of the night. And then Sheamus will probably beat Miz for the title at some point. And then it's going to be Drew facing Sheamus at WrestleMania to be coronated yet again. Go for it.
I don't think Miz wins the title. I'm going to shoot my shot on this.
That's my weakest part of my whole theory. And
I think he has a blown cash-in. I think he goes Sandow on it. Especially given that the only thing that makes me take pause is he could go, second time's a charm, and he might do all that heelish stuff. But I think it's just as likely as that he gets the briefcase twice and blows it twice. Because him and Morrison are presented as boobs.
See, I was angry that they took him out of the match because the logic didn't fit. Because to me, yeah, you can avoid getting hurt and you can call your shot any time, but you also get a mulligan. And I thought for certain, okay, Miz loses in the chamber, then cashes in for another shot, and then loses it again. I thought that was for certain going to be the move here. But yeah, no, I can see them having him be the goof and not getting the title. I could see
that. Especially with the whole he's a master strategist thing that they were teasing.
Yeah, and they don't have that guy. They have Corbin to kick around who did that still. But, you know, having a guy in each brand that you can say you blew it, you know, it opens up for the Vince type of promos. But please continue your thinking.
No, that's it. Who wins? Who wins? I think McIntyre wins. I think he hangs on. I think he's going to go into Mania against Sheamus. I think that's the angle. They haven't gotten to the end of the Sheamus storyline.
You and I agree with that. You and I agree that it's going to be Drew and Sheamus in Mania.
At Mania. Just... they might dipsy doodle and add someone else in at this upcoming pay-per-view. It could also be Miz could also decide on the Raw after this that he wants to cash in at the pay-per-view. And, like, that's the rib of him not being a master strategist.
Or he could cash in and go, I want to be the main event at WrestleMania, and he becomes the third wheel. Drew and Sheamus.
Yeah, that could be it, too.
That would be terrible. That would be dreadful for him to do
Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Miz match is already giving me the wrong type of goosebumps. The goosebumps of absolute abject horror. But the only benefit of that is maybe they do a match and that's less of a match and more of a skitlet. They just do, you know, a few Claymore kicks and go home sort of thing.
It's going to do it for us. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can follow the show at ShakeThemRopes, all one word. If you are on Clubhouse, you can follow me at Jeff Hawk. I'm trying out Clubhouse. I don't know how long I'll be there. I may start a Voices of Wrestling channel just to see what happens. But who knows? I'm still uncertain about it a bit. Please subscribe to all the Voices of Wrestling shows. We are a proud member of the Voices of Wrestling Network. Flagship with Rich and Joe, of course, being our big seller out here, but also us and Everything Elite with that crew over there, and Andrew Rich over on Music of the Mat, and John over at Wrestling Omakase. Whatever your fetish.
My other
is.
Show, Jackalope Nation, which I checked the feeds yet again. It seems like Lanza and Rich aren't posting these. I don't know.
They told me they'd post it as soon as you got high wattage back up and running.
I send you these files. I give the update every week on Retribution. What's the ins? What's the outs? The rumors. I get all the dirt. If you want updates on Mace and T-Bar.
I want an update on
Reckoning.
Versus Xavier Woods. What's going to happen with that?
You will have to tune in to Jackalope Nation, which should be on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, but they won't put it on the feed. Thank you very much. And you also won't change your name, at least on air, to Slap Jackins. So... Jack Slapkins.
Chris, plug Don't Worry About the Government.
Don't Worry About the Government is another show, and because it is liberated from the tyranny that is Jack Slapkins and Rich Kreitch and Joe Lanza, it gets out to the people, unlike Jackalope Nation. You can find that over at don'tworry.tv. You can find me at DWATG. And if you want to support the show, you can go over to patreon.com/DWATG and you can get the video version of the show for just a buck a show for supporting the show. So go and do that. And if you want to check out the YouTube channel too and want to see what like video versions of the show are, I am now putting up the shows like a month back and older. So like, you know, they'll be like 4, 6, 8 weeks old episodes. But if you ever want to just see like what it looks like to see a video version of it, you can do that now by going to YouTube and searching for Don't Worry About the Government.
And Bobo the Wonder Monkey says ITRM next week goes to the moon.